Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to a Daily Tech News Show special edition. I'm Tom Merritt, and today we're going to dig in a little bit about the state of YouTube from the creators' side. And joining us to talk about that, Jason Inman, host of Geek History Lesson, showrunner's assistant on The Code CBS, and author of Super Soldiers, a salute to the comic book heroes and villains who fought for their country. We'll talk a little bit about that book in a minute, too. Jason, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
First of all, before we get into Susan Wojcicki's blog post of last week, and just kind of the general feeling around YouTube, which seems broadly negative, and yet
I think
everyone
correct.
Still uses it,
yes.
And it's growing. but give people a little background on your experience on YouTube, because I know you've done a lot of different things.
Yeah, actually, YouTube was basically my first career, especially when I moved out to Los Angeles. I got a job working for this YouTube channel called Mahalo.com, which was this big how-to video aggregate, because about around 2010, that's what YouTube was into, was how-to videos. You put how-to in a video, it exploded. From there, I was able to get a job with Rhett and Link, and I'm actually the producer and writer and the cameraman for the first 400 episodes of Good Mythical Morning.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're up to like 1,200s now. So like that was where I got a lot of my big education. And then I took that over to channels like Collider. I've worked with Collider. I worked with Screen Junkies on the Honest Trailers and stuff like that. So like I've kind of been a little bit all over the place, as long as doing my own channel.
Yeah, and
Jawan, YouTube.com/Jawan.
And what kind of things have you done on your channel?
Basically, we've always just been kind of a geeky, nerdy content channel, like talking about comic books, talking basically like around the idea of comic books.
Also, happy Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's the best holiday of the year, man.
Exactly. Given all of that broad experience, mm-hmm. both in sort of the technical side and the producer side and the host side, running your own channel, we have this blog post that came out from Susan Wojcicki earlier this week. We actually talked about it on one of the regular Daily Tech News shows in regards to her comments on content removal and a couple of remarks regarding not worrying about false positives in certain cases. But the blog post is called Addressing Creator Feedback and an Update on My 2019 Priorities. And in addition to those moderation things, she talks about supporting creator and artist success. She talks about improving communication and engagement. What was your reaction reading through that post?
Reading through this post, my biggest reaction is, I've heard it before. I've heard this from YouTube several times before. The biggest thing about this blog post that stands out to me is that they're living up to responsibility and how they're like, we're taking down certain comments, we're doing this. To me, it feels like YouTube got caught with their hand in the cookie jar and now they're apologizing for it. And it's like, we knew their hand was in the cookie jar for years. We knew they were not taking care of these things for years.
And they were like, what hand? What cookie jar?
Yeah, they're like, oh, you got us. But comments and things like this have been on YouTube's for years. It has been a problem for years. And they've always had that little button that says report spam or report abuse. And you do it. But I have never in my entire YouTube career, working on YouTube for several years, have ever seen any follow back or any change off of those actions.
Yeah, and the complaints about YouTube are numerous. There's the comment moderation, like you're talking about, and feeling like you don't have any help on that. Mm-hmm. There's takedowns where you feel like your stuff got taken down inappropriately, and the appeals process feels like a dark, empty hall. Mm-hmm. I've experienced that myself a few times.
Too. Yeah, several times.
There's the monetization problems that people have had, which Daily Tech News Show has not fallen under, but my own personal channel did because it didn't qualify for the minutes.
The 10,000 subscribers.
Yeah. So what kind of complaints do you think are the valid ones, the ones that are pertain to you, and which ones are maybe like, well, come on, people, relax. They're not entirely evil.
The ones that, you know, I'm almost entirely on the creator side with this one. Like, I don't think there are any creator complaints that, you know, aren't valid. The biggest problem I would say is that I guess we're all finally getting a taste of what we knew was going to happen. Like, when we all signed up for YouTube, they gave us that giant long user agreement that none of us read, and we said yes to it.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, we are now suffering at the cost of that user agreement because YouTube can change their algorithm. YouTube can literally delete your videos, Tom, delete my videos, and we would have no repercussions. We could not go back to them because I guarantee you there's a line somewhere in that user agreement that says we can do whatever we want with your channel and you can say nothing.
It's their platform.
It is their platform. And I guess that's the devil that we know, and we've worked with this devil because they're the biggest devil on the internet. But in terms of the other stuff, YouTube has always been a difficult platform to figure out to be successful at. It's impossible. And a lot of times it seems like it is a roll of the dice because mm-hmm. of their weird algorithm. And I have specifically dealt with one time at Screen Junkies in the middle of my time there, we had figured it out. Like, we knew exactly the tags to use. We knew exactly the title to use. We knew exactly the thumbnail to work. If we could do that, we'd hit 1 million views. No problem. Easy. And then about 6 months into my time at Screen Junkies, that was no longer working for no reason.
Right.
Nobody told us why it wasn't working. Nobody told us.
Echoes a lot of the search engine complaints too.
Exactly. And that, I think it was Google's like search engine mm-hmm. change is what basically screwed us out of that. So that is a big complaint. Like, you would think that if YouTube cares as much about their creators as they say they do, they would give at least some of the bigger creators like, hey, heads up. We're going to change your algorithm. You know, it's going to focus more on this or XYZ factor or something like that. But they never do. They just do it. And then suddenly we're swimming in deep waters, being like, what is going on?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the ways to look at YouTube, because I don't believe that there's, you know, and I've actually seen this rhetoric out there that, you know, YouTube is just planning our demise. They just want to soak us for money and then leave us dry. And it's like, that's actually not a sustainable business model, even if they were perfectly pragmatic. And I don't think they're heartless people.
No.
My wife used to be one of them. So I've met many of them. They're perfectly wonderful folks. But I think one of the things that happens with YouTube is they started small, as all of these companies did. And the attraction to creators was, I don't have to go through all the hurdles I would have to go through at a network to get noticed. I can start my channel and make it, right? It's the promise of the internet. I'm judged on my quality, not on who I know or my connections.
Immediately to your 5 minutes of fame.
And what happened is that worked fine until it didn't because of scale. At a certain point, not everything can get noticed without YouTube's help, right? In the early days, sure, you know, word of mouth might actually bring a YouTube video to prominence. But after a certain point, you need recommendations. And I think YouTube and Google in general, being an engineering company, thought, well, the system will take care of that. And the best stuff will rise because we have the processes and we don't need to provide human support for that. And that's where the disconnect came. When people suddenly were like, hey, there are literally 1 million other channels like mine. I want mine to stand out.
Yes.
Who can I talk to about this? And YouTube said, no one. We've got an algorithm. And if you deserve to stand out, you will.
Yeah. And the algorithm obviously supports the mob rule, because, you know, say if the mob is only watching Rhett and Link videos, of course that's the only videos that YouTube is going to service to these users. They're not going to give somebody the brand new channel that maybe has the exact same quality of content, same camera, same lighting, same sound setup, and similar tone, like, you know, say, you know, it's a
and the algorithm could do that. It just doesn't seem like it ever did.
But it won't. Yeah, exactly. It never did that. And it's funny, I can tell you exactly when that happened, around 2014, 2015. That's when that break happened, because from my own personal experience on my own channel, and I've never, I mean, currently I have like 75,000 subscribers. I don't have a lot of subscribers, but I have like a steady audience. And back then I only had like 20,000 subscribers because my YouTube channel has always been something that I do on my spare time. It's been like, well, when I get the time, I'll do it, you know, but it's never been like the number one thing. I've always done other jobs like that. On my own channel, I used to do this fun thing where about, you know, every 2 to 3 months, I would try to plan a video or a music video or something like that, you know, something that was fun. And then back then in like 2012, I could make that video hit 500,000 views easy. No problem. I knew the right way. Like, and I was, you know, predictive with like, oh, I think this will pop, or this will be a meme, or this will be related to Game of Thrones. It'll be related to Walking Dead. And then around 2014, 2015, I made like a video just like that. It was called The History of Doctor Who. Got featured by the BBC. The BBC tweeted it out, did all this stuff like that. I was like, this video is going to go huge. 30,000 views. And I was like, two years earlier, same method, same everything, I guarantee you that video would have been like 800,000 views.
Well, it reminds me of podcasting. In the early days of podcasting, putting a podcast out got you listeners because, hey, there's a show that talks about a thing. And these days, it's much more difficult to get a podcast noticed because there's so many out there. With YouTube, it's complicated by the fact that not only are there so many other creators out there making videos on YouTube than there used to be, but there is only one authority for discovering them. At least with podcasting, you can go to Spotify, you can go to Pocket Cast, whereas YouTube, you can go to YouTube, and maybe you'll get tweeted or Facebooked or catch on some way that way, but it's all in YouTube's hands. And again, going back in the early days, it was great for people to feel good because when you have 100 creators on YouTube and YouTube features 10% of them, then 10 people feel really great. And other people are like, hey, I could be like those 10 people. When you have a billion creators on YouTube and they feature 10%, that feels like a lot fewer people because you get a lot more people who didn't get featured and are no longer feeling like, hey, I could be like them, but like there's no way I'll ever be like them.
And the YouTube model also feeds into that because the YouTube model is that what you talked about earlier. I can put a video on, I can be immediately famous. And so people have, for the last 10 years, seen other people do that. So when they start their YouTube channel and they maybe do the exact same things, but the algorithm is not featuring their video, so their videos only get like 500, 600 views, that also leads to the frustration increasing because they're like, well, why can't I be like them? They're doing the same thing, you know?
I think it is an impossible task. I don't think YouTube can make everybody happy.
I don't think so.
Even if the algorithm was perfect at recommending newer and less frequented channels, it wouldn't expose you to everything because there's just too much.
No.
And so they're in a little bit of a pickle there. Also, exposing new and unproven channels is risky.
Yes.
These days, the first third of this blog post from Wojcicki is about making sure that dangerous content doesn't get out there. And promoting unproven channels.
There's still a lot of dangerous content left on YouTube that they haven't found.
Exactly. So they've got a scale problem, both in the moderation, in the community side. And I think what happens is, you know how there's that principle that you can only know like really well, like 100 people or something. I can't remember what the exact number is, but it's a small number of people. I feel like YouTube has that problem. We're like, okay, we can know 100 creators. And after that, we just, it's beyond our ken.
You're on your own. You're out in the Mad Max wasteland fighting for the scraps.
So what could they do given that? I mean, transparency obviously is part of it, and she mentions that here, which, like you say, it's like about time.
Well, they do have a couple programs that I think actually do help creators. They do this thing called every year called the Next Up, where they feature, like, they gather 30 creators in LA and 30 creators in New York, and they've done that every year, and they supposedly say that they're going to help these channels out. They give them a little bit of money, they give them some budget, new equipment, and then supposedly in the algorithm, they're supposed to help feature them more to help you discover these new channels because YouTube thinks these new channels are good. So that's something they could do. I hate to say this because I don't know whether this is a good idea or not. I wonder if YouTube's categories need to be more segmented, if they need to be more separate. So that way, if people are looking for the stuff they want to see on YouTube, they will go to the categories first because YouTube has these categories.
Yeah,
and they break up these categories. And maybe that would be a way to spread the YouTube democracy.
Like have a news front page and an entertainment and comics front page.
Yeah, maybe it's youtube.com/news, youtube.com/, you know, like kind of like Reddit.
Yeah.
Like there's all these different subreddits that are all over the place, and there's lots of Reddit that I never look at because I'm just not interested. Maybe YouTube needs to do that and then focus down on the algorithm within each category. Beyond that, the only other solution I have to say to people right now is to say, don't start a YouTube channel, go to Twitch or go somewhere else.
Well, and I think that's the other solution to this, and it's not a solution to YouTube's problem, but one of the reasons YouTube takes so much heat is I don't think people feel like they have another option.
Yeah.
Right? And there's Vimeo, but Vimeo is limited, and I think wisely in their case, pivoting towards focusing on quality and filmmaker and that sort of thing. Twitch is there, but Twitch doesn't have the ability to host back catalog the same as YouTube, at least not right now. So some people look at that and go, well, man, it's not exactly the same thing. At least there's some alternatives, but if there were more alternatives, then I think YouTube would have less heat on it because someone would go to something else that's like YouTube and realize, oh, this isn't, the same problems exist. Some of these problems are just problems of being on the internet rather than blaming YouTube for every single problem that exists when you make content on the internet. Yes. Some of that's why I asked you that thing at the beginning, is I think some of the criticism of YouTube is like, well, okay, yes, the internet exists and has been like this since the 90s. Yeah. But I don't think people feel that when they don't feel like they have a choice of where to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's also the same thing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Like, you know, buying from Amazon or buying from Walmart, especially like if you're living in a community that where I grew up where, you know, there's only 20,000 people in your town, Walmart's all you got. And sometimes I feel like YouTube is that for video on the internet, because you are right. Vimeo is too specialized and it's too, this is a terrible word, but I'm going to say it, professional.
Yeah.
Like it seems
I think Vimeo is like, yes, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to segment themselves away from YouTube. Yeah. If there was a YouTube competitor, it would be a different ballgame, but
which I guess there's Daily Motion, but
yeah,
YouTube is just too dominant. I'm not saying we should go break them up necessarily.
Oh no,
but,
no, I don't.
But,
think, I don't.
Yeah,
think so
I think
either.
That's a cause of one of the problems.
You know, I mean, the other option is, and I don't think we want to see YouTube do this, because the thing we love about YouTube is the ability to upload immediately. Is for YouTube to be more picky about who gets to be on their platform and who doesn't. But I think that kind of defeats the purpose of being YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, first of all, there's that engineering mindset we talked about. But second of all, they also want to maintain their safe harbor defense.
Yeah.
And even if legally they could have a curated page, I think they want that defense of like, we never pick any winners.
Yes.
Because people are already accusing them of picking winners just by running an algorithm.
And they do.
Yeah.
The algorithm picks winners.
And like, I mean, think if they were literally picking winners, then it would be even harder for them to defend that. So
it would be even worse. So it's like, this depends on like, I guess the optic they want to present.
Yeah, yeah. I've always felt like YouTube needed a homepage that featured stuff, though.
Yeah.
And they just, I understand why they won't do it, but I kind of feel like, oh, you're going to get this criticism anyway. You might as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it could help other things. Yeah. Well, I think we've solved YouTube. There you go, Susan Wojcicki. No. Folks, if you have thoughts on this, by all means, feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. We'd love to hear them. Before we go, though, tell us a little bit about super soldiers. This is a fascinating concept for a book.
This is a book that I've been wanting to write for a long time. It's a nonfiction book where I'm an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran from the Army. And I've always noticed that there's been a weird connection between the military and superheroes, and that the military is sort of used as a shorthand in a lot of superheroes' journeys. So I wanted to explore a lot of that. And in the terms of doing the research for this book and putting this book together, I realized that there was no better way to express certain aspects of military life than literally putting my own stories from my own military life in there. So each chapter focuses on a superhero or a supervillain from comic books that served in the military, like Captain America's in there, Nick Fury's in there, the Punisher's in there, some of the ones you know. And then there's other characters, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the DC Comics character Gravedigger.
Oh, wow, no.
See, he's in there. He's chapter number three.
Huh.
So there's a lot of different characters in there, and exposing what their military careers say about them, whether they're a good soldier or not, and did the writers get it, or are the writers like way off the mark? And that's kind of all the things that this book explores. I will say this, the best quote I've ever had on it is my wife, Ashley Victoria Robinson, got to read the book early, of course. She was my first beta reader. And she said that she thought the book, for being about comic book superheroes, was way more personal about my military life than she ever expected.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and that is the beauty of it, is that it is a memoir.
Yeah.
But it's also an analysis of superheroes.
Sure.
And yeah, so if you come for one, stay for the other, because you basically have very nicely weaved two books into one.
Yeah.
That fans of one or the other might not have been exposed to otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it's actually made me excited to maybe actually write a memoir of my time in the military or something like that, because that was something I never considered for years. So it was interesting to explore that through these comic book superheroes. And it's also interesting, I found, and it really surprised me in kind of like thinking about it objectively and doing the research on all these characters, which ones are good soldiers and which ones are bad. Mm. And there are the ones that are bad.
Like, it's not always villains, not always heroes.
Well, like, right? The best example I'll give you is the Punisher. Everybody wants to like be like, Punisher's a terrible character. Like, he's just not good. And I agree, he should not be celebrated because he's basically a villain.
Mm-hmm.
But when you objectively like step back from the Punisher and look at his stories and look at how he's presented, he just needs a hug. He literally needs a hug and therapy. If he had just gotten that, he'd have been fine. But nobody gave him the hug. Nobody gave him the therapy. So he picked up a gun and started shooting people.
Yeah. I laugh, but I shouldn't laugh, because that is an all too real situation.
Yeah, it's
right?
A very, very, very real question. So, so the book comes out June 18th. It's available for pre-order right now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, indie-bound, basically anywhere you can find it. And I'm doing this special until the book comes out, that if you pre-order the book and you email me at jasoninmanauthor@gmail.com, I'll send you the first three chapters of the book to read before anybody else, and a video about my writing process, like why I pick certain characters and stuff like that.
Fascinating.
So only if you pre-order the book. Anywhere. You can even give me the receipt from your local bookstore.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks
this
for
is
having
great.
Me, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks, thank you for supporting Daily Tech News Show. It's because of you that we're able to do extra episodes like this. So keep on supporting us. Become a member if you're not already at patreon.com/DTNS.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this moment.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.